It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's the moment of the evening every K-State fan enjoys. Settle down and pour a whiskey, crack open a LaCroix. Please put your hands together and make a little noise for your favorite Wildcatters, the handsome Bosco boys.
Ooh, Bosco's boys.
Come on, boys.
Boom, the boys are back, and what a 7 days it has been for late April when it comes to college football news. This is exactly why we have the podcast. This is exactly why we don't take days off, weeks off, months off. This is exactly why this show is still going, because I can't get enough of K-State football and basketball news. And and I just love talking about it. Love talking about it. Love getting my thoughts out there. So it was a big one. And because it was a big one, we're going to have back-to-back days with shows to wrap up April. Today, as you can see from the title of this episode, I'll be talking exclusively about K-State football. Tomorrow, we'll have K-State basketball. And hell, we're going to have to throw in a pretty major women's basketball portal pickup in there as well, because K-State women's basketball got a massive pickup last, I guess, what, 8 days ago? If you guys are listening to this on Monday, it occurred after I recorded last week's episode. So some big stuff, portal wins for both sports. Some big scheduling news for both sports, and still a lot of targets for both sports. Today, obviously, we're going to lead off with the Dylan Edwards news committing to K-State. Then we'll talk about Farmageddon going to Ireland. We'll touch on that one more time. And then we will talk about some other portal pursuits. Then we'll end talking about the NFL draft. Tomorrow, like I said, will be all basketball. Before we dive head deep into it, let's give a shout-out to our friends at Manhattan Brewing Company. First and foremost, Wing Wars, get your tickets. It's happening in July. I will be there. You should, too. It's going to be a fun, great event, especially if you love buffalo wings, chicken wings like myself, and great beer. Can't wait for that this July. Also, with all this recruiting wins, both in the portal and in high school, remember, every time you buy a can, a draft, crowlers, anything of Wabash Ale, a portion of the proceeds go back to Wildcat NIL. And then, of course, it's the best beer in the state of Kansas. It's one of the greatest breweries in the state of Kansas. Look, I go to all sorts of different breweries of different sizes, big and small. The service and the quality and the atmosphere at Manhattan Brewing Company is unmatched by any of them that I've ever gone to. I love Manhattan Brewing Company. I stop by there every time I get to Manhattan, and I can't wait for my next visit. Also, they're doing fun events all throughout the state. Recently, they've been in Johnson County. They did some stuff in Wichita. They've been going to some brewery events, the Kansas Craft Brewery tasting in Lawrence, all sorts of great stuff. If you want to stay on top of the great events that they're putting on, the great events that they're part of, and all sorts of great beer releases, make sure you're following them on social media, both Instagram and Twitter. Look, one of their owners is a former K-State Wildcat football player, so you're giving back not only to the Manhattan community, but a great former Wildcat every time you're going in there supporting local business. So shout out to Manhattan Brewing Company, the best brewery in the world. All right, let's get right into it. Dylan Edwards is a cat. Now, look, he hopped in the portal after we had our episode last week, and right when he went in, I knew K-State would be a player. He was working out with Avery Johnson and some walk-on candidates in Wichita, running routes, working out, dating back to last December. I know that once he made his decision to go into the portal, I know that K-State jumped back in there. I know there are a lot of hurt feelings amongst the fans when he decommitted and decided to go to Notre Dame last year, or not last year, during his recruitment process. But folks forget that he was back on campus multiple times, even while he was committed to Notre Dame. This is a guy that the coaching staff never gave up on. And I want to give so much credit to Taylor Bratt because, look, Taylor Bratt at K-State is one of the biggest assets to K-State football. But when you're talking about in-state kids, nobody cares more than Taylor Bratt. And I think when the door opened again, I think between Taylor Bratt, I think between Avery Johnson, I think between all the guys that are in that recruiting class, everyone remembers how many Kansas kids we had from that recruiting class. Dylan Edwards had those relationships. You know, again, he has a relationship dating back, you know, 15 years, you know, going back to when they were 4 and 5 with Avery Johnson. But he developed relationships with all those Kansas guys. And when he decided, okay, you know, I've had enough of college, all those relationships paid off. And again, while fans, myself included, I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't mad. I wasn't, you know, in my own feelings, you know, when Dylan Edwards decommitted, you know, that summer. But, you know, this is a guy that, you know, the coaches kept good relationships with. You know, the recruits kept a good relationship with. And look, I think that there were a lot of players. I think UCLA, I think Texas A&M, I think Ole Miss, I think Nebraska, I think KU tried to get involved now. From, you know, what I've heard, what I've been told, he didn't bother picking up the phone for KU. But there's plenty of interest outside of K-State. But he made a visit, and K-State shut it down. And I think that for some of the fans who are still remembering, oh, you know, he decommitted to us, and then he went through this whole hubbubaloo and Notre Dame and then decommitting Colorado, all this stuff. He took one set of visits. The visits were relatively quiet. You know, there were whispers, there were rumors of him being around, but it wasn't until, you know, some K-State students posted something on Twitter about, you know, taking pictures with him that anyone had any confirmation about this. He didn't try to egg it on. He didn't try to draw it out. It was, you know, a visit, what, Friday, Saturday, commitment on Sunday. Now he's part of the team. I think anyone who has any sort of worries about Dylan Edwards need to let that go. And he, by all intents and purposes, has matured over the last 2 years. And at the end of the day, that's just what big-time recruits do. Again, I'm not going to pretend like I wasn't upset how things went down the first time. But look, this is just big time recruiting. And because the staff, because the players, because of those relationships, this is a guy who decided, hey, Colorado's not for me. I want to come. I want to play big time football with a coaching staff that isn't about the clicks, isn't about the social media. It's about ball. We were the first visit. We were able to shut it down. I think this is absolutely massive. I think that if you go back and listen to what we said when Dylan Edwards committed the first time, it all rings true. This is a guy with world-class speed, a guy who actually was doing stuff with the Colorado track team before he took a step back from that, and I think that was the first sign that he may be looking to maybe go elsewhere. So I don't know if he's going to run track at K-State or not. I would imagine no. But he's a guy who's fast enough that if he wanted to, he could. He is dynamic with the ball in his hands. He was Colorado's leading rusher last year. He caught a ton of passes. Go back to week one and watch what he did versus TCU. It's questioning. It's mind-boggling that Colorado didn't use him hardly at all, you know, halfway through the season. I think kind of goes to the dysfunction out there. They also had a horrible offensive line. But you see it in his tape last year playing power conference college football, what he was able to do, the level of athlete that he is. And then you have to remember that not only is he coming to a coaching staff that turned Deuce Vaughn into a consensus All-American, not only is he coming to his home state program, but he doesn't even have to be the pressure being the bell cow. You know, you still have DJ who is going to be getting between 20 to 23, 24 touches a game, which allows Dylan Edwards to do what he does best, and that is be a home run hitter. Whether it is taking the ball in the backfield, whether it is lining up in the slot and playing wide receiver, he is an all-purpose back, and he's a guy that has NFL potential. Everything that we saw with Deuce Vaughn, Dylan Edwards has those same physical skills. Now, is he going to be an absolute lunatic when it comes to watching film, doing the things off the field, doing everything that set Deuce Vaughn apart from almost any other running back to come to K-State? Time will tell. Time will tell. And I don't want to put that level of expectation on him, but the level of athlete, the level of potential that Dylan Edwards has is sky high. And when you couple that with the dynamicism, that's not even a word, but you pair that with the dynamic level of athlete that Avery Johnson is. You pair that up with future NFL draft pick DJ Giddens, who was a 1,500-yard back in his own right last year. Again, running and receiving. And you have that trio in your backfield. You have that trio of Kansans from Junction City, from Wichita, from Derby, homegrown guys, two blue chippers, and then one of the most underrated guys to ever go through a high school football season. And you have to be licking your chops if you're Connor Riley. You have to be licking your chops if you're Matt Wells, Brian Anderson. This group of men, throw in Brian Lepak as well, throw them all in. This group has to just be going nuts thinking about what they can do. And every single K-State fan should be celebrating this for the massive recruiting win that it is. This was the highest rated running back in the transfer portal, and he chose to come to K-State knowing that we are returning a 1,500-yard back who can run and receive. And he has enough confidence in the coaching staff and in the game plan. And I forgot to mention Matthew Middleton, by the way. I'm sorry, as I was listing all the offensive coaches, volumes. And I don't think any K-State fan, I don't think any of us are underselling how big of a pickup this is. And it's not just for this year, but it sets you up in 2025 as well. For what could be a massive season. Because again, if DJ Giddens has a big year, you go pro as a running back. You go pro, you start your clock, you get paid. So if that happens, you still have a dynamic player just waiting in the wings with a whole stable of young playmakers behind you as well. The K-State offense at the running back position, while there's a lot of potential that you have to kind of hang your hat on, I think you have a lot of stars in that running back room right now. Now, but before the Dylan Edwards news, the biggest piece of news, and it really drew passionate responses from everyone, and we even did a live show on Twitter Spaces to talk about it. It's Farmageddon going to Ireland. Now, probably not going to spend, a whole show on this, which I could, because this type of stuff, this is really intriguing to me. There's different international markets who are really trying to bring in college athletics from America to quench the thirst for specifically American football, but American sports as a whole. Now, a place like Dublin could never dream of getting an NFL game. That's why they are putting so much money when it comes to trying to attract a week zero marquee college football game every single season. They already have games, I believe, for 2027 still on the schedule. From what I've been told, there's probably going to be an announcement for 2026 here relatively soon. It might be featuring some SEC teams. You know, this is a game that Notre Dame gave up a home game to participate in last year. Northwestern and Nebraska were the first game of this iteration of it. There's been a handful of college football games in Ireland before that game, but that kicked off a series. And it's something that, you know, these corporations that are sponsoring the game, putting the game on, that I think you're going to see almost every single year. I think it's going to become a staple and really signal the kickoff of college football every single year. I think we're going to see the Ireland game turn into, oh, wow, okay, you know, week zero, here's two conference teams going up against each other, or in the case of Army-Navy, two longtime rivals playing each other, and, you know, it's the kickoff to college football season. I think there's a lot of good things about it. I think there's plenty of bad things. I'll just get my take out there because, again, I think, you know, first off, deep down, I've gone back and forth on this. I think, gun to my head, I don't know if I would have pulled the trigger on this one if I was Gene Taylor and Chris Kleiman. Now, you know, I'll start on the bad side of things, and then we'll go to the good stuff. Like, look, at the end of the day, I'm close to 50-50, but like I said, I think right now I'm landing on I wouldn't pull the trigger. We just started talking about how exciting this upcoming season's going to be when you have Avery Johnson, you have Dylan Edwards. At the end of the day, outside of DJ Giddens, who I think is going to go to the NFL draft, and I think you're going to have Dante Cephas, and we'll talk later about some of the other guys who might be on you know, NFL draft boards. But I think you're going to be returning a lot of talent coming into 2025. And I think that coming into 2024, I think you're going to have Big 12 championship aspirations, which now in the new world of college football means college football playoff aspirations. So if you accomplish those goals, you win the Big 12, you get into the inaugural 12-team college football playoff, I can't imagine what the hype will be going into 2025 when you're returning a lot of those pieces. So why would you set yourself up for any sort of disadvantage? Because, look, I believe in K-State fans. I think there's going to be plenty of purple in that stadium. But there's going to be plenty of Iowa State fans as well. So I think you're setting yourself up for a 50-50 crowd, you know, across an ocean with all sorts of variables that make it tougher to win that game than if you were playing that game in Manhattan. Now, you can play devil's advocate saying, hey, that's the very first game of the season, so you know you're going to be at your healthiest. You know, if that's the take, then hey, that's fine as well. But I think between the added elements of moving this game away from your fans, where you're going to have 50,000 K-State fans and maybe 1,000 Iowa State fans to, you know, 20,000 of each, I think that is putting you at a little bit of a disadvantage. And I think ultimately that is the biggest downside of this for me. Moving any conference home game to Ireland for this situation, it hurts your chances to get to Arlington. What I think is the ultimate goal for where K-State is winning the Big 12. So moving a conference game over there that was supposed to be a home game hurts that. So ultimately, if you put a gun to my head, that's probably where I land. Now, some other reasons why I think fans are mad, and all of these things I understand as a season ticket holder. So I'm not trying to devalue this as reason why people are mad. But you're having back-to-back seasons with six games. You're having back-to-back season or three straight seasons, excuse me, with only four Big 12 home games, conference games at home. Because this game isn't going to be played in 2027, You will not see Iowa State playing K-State in Manhattan until 2028 at the earliest. So there's a lot of reasons why this isn't great. Again, I'm not a local business owner, but I'm sure they're thinking to themselves, dang, you know, that's back-to-back years without seven home games. And hey, that was supposed to be a pretty big one. So I understand the idea from fans that, hey, you know, the value of the season ticket, you know, next year, it doesn't look that great. Now, I would kind of push back on that a little bit. While it's only six games, having that Army game is going to be fun. That's the first time Army's played in Manhattan in a real long time. And you couple that with the Fort Riley partnership, I imagine that's going to be a pretty fun atmosphere. You're getting Texas Tech, TCU, both teams who I think are going to be Big 12 contenders coming to Manhattan. You're going to have Colorado coming to Manhattan for the first time since, what, 2008, 2009, something like that. So I still think you're going to have home games that are going to be anticipated. Now, I think that that is, I think the K-State, Iowa State game would have been the highest anticipated game. I think that that probably would have been the game that K-State fans were looking forward to the most. So I understand. I understand why that's frustrating. I understand why people are sad about that. But I do think you're still going to have games that are going to have hype around them. I still think there's going to be games that are anticipated. So I totally understand all that. Now, the flip side to where this, I think, is a good thing, again, it's going to give fans and, more importantly, players and staff an experience of going over to Ireland, something that a lot of them probably have not yet experienced, and some may never would have without this. Basketball, they're lucky enough to go on in some of the other sports. Every 4 years, they get to take a preseason tour somewhere, and they get the opportunity to go to a different country, to go to a different location. Then they also have the multi-team events where they get to do that. Football doesn't get to do that. So I understand when you're talking about the experience for the student athletes and the staff, that plays a big part of it. I talked about how big of a season it could be. If K-State, you know, again, if we have the type of season in 2024 like we're wanting, and again, Iowa State probably has ambitions of becoming a top 25 team again and maybe even getting to Arlington themselves. If these teams have good 2024s, the hype for that game going into 2025 is going to be unreal. Say K-State has another top 20 season, whether they win the Big 12 or not, that would be three straight seasons. You're probably starting the season near the top 15. If you go out there and in front of 4 million fans watching on TV, win that game versus Iowa State, who may be a top 25 team themselves, and then Avery Johnson has a big game, the amount of hype around K-State's playoff odds, K-State is a Big 12 contender, K-State just as a team that the nation needs to be paying attention to, goes through the roof to a level that we haven't seen on August 24th that we probably haven't seen since 2003. You know, again, everyone remembers, you know, having that great year in 2011, but the hype wasn't nearly where it was or where it should have been in 2012. Everyone remembers the preseason hype last year. It would be a whole nother level, just an insane level. If you go to on week zero, 4 million people watching, Avery Johnson has a big game. He's going to be at the top of every Heisman straw poll in the country before week one. So between all that, and again, You also, if K-State Athletics is to be believed, and I have no reason not to believe them, they're also netting out an extra $1.5 million versus if you were just having it as a home game. That's the number that's been told to media outlets. I don't know if Gene Taylor used that number exactly, but it's been reported elsewhere. And that's a nice little check of change. Now, I don't think they're doing this just for the money. I truly don't. I think there are a lot of positives. So again, while I'm 50-50 on this, probably leaning towards I wouldn't have done it. I would not have made this call. I 100% understand why. And I'm still quite excited for that, and I'll be doing my damnedest to get over there. So we'll see what happens. One other thing that's lost in this situation is, according to Gene Taylor, during his Ask the AD segment with Brian Smoller, K-State's still planning on playing the or the non-conference schedule as currently scheduled. So you would see the season starting in week zero versus Iowa State on the 23rd, North Dakota on August 30th, Army on September 6th, and then at Arizona as part of the non-conference series on September 13th, meaning after that stretch to open up with four games because of how early Memorial Day lands this upcoming season. Or is it Labor Day? Labor Day or Memorial Day? I'm sorry. I'm still buzzing with the Dylan Edwards news, so forgive me if I have them mixed up. But because it's early, similar to this season, most teams are having two bye weeks this season. Well, if K-State keeps the non-conference as is, K-State will have three bye weeks all nestled in between the other eight conference games. Now, definitely not the reason to make this move. That does put you at a competitive advantage down the stretch. If you're able to start 4-0 and you're then staring down the barrel of eight more conference games with three bye weeks, hopefully setting yourself up for a run to Arlington, hopefully setting yourself up again for a playoff appearance, folks, that is absolutely massive as well. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But I am excited, even though I probably wouldn't have made this call. All right, we will wrap up this football-only episode talking about some portal pursuits still happening and then recapping the NFL draft. The big get and a guy I'm pretty – I don't want to say confident, but I have a good feeling about is Elijah Herring from Tennessee. He was their leading tackler last season as a sophomore. He has 2 years of eligibility left, but he would fill the hole instantly as starting Mike linebacker, middle linebacker, with Jake Clifton leaving the team. He had 80 tackles last year, 4 tackles for a loss. Like I said, 2 seasons of eligibility left. This would be an absolutely massive pickup. Colorado was the other team rumored for him to be involved with. They already grabbed a middle linebacker. So unless he gets more visits lined up, you got to be feeling confident about getting that filled. Absolutely massive. Another visitor that you can take off the list, Devon Booth. He was a guy out of Utah State, had over 850 yards, a handful of touchdowns. We got Dylan Edwards. I don't foresee any chance that he is coming to K-State. So be looking for him to end up at Utah. So maybe we'll be seeing him in Arlington or up in Salt Lake City next year as K-State goes on the road. And some other linebackers that you want to keep an eye on. Alec Marcino, the New Mexico leading tackler, honorable mention. In the Mountain West. I think it's between K-State and Arizona. If we can land Herring, Elijah Herring, I don't think that he's going to be on the table. Miles Jernigan from Cal Berkeley, he also took a visit again. I think the goal, you lock in Herring, and then you just build the depth from the young linebackers behind him. So I'm hoping that's what happens. The last guy to keep an eye on, Andrew Shambly. He was an Arkansas transfer, formerly the number 17 offensive tackle in the nation, according to 247. He's an in-demand player. I'd call him a luxury-type player because I think K-State would feel fine going into week one with the current group they have on the offensive line. But if you are able to grab him, you could maybe play him at left tackle, kick Easton Kilty inside to have him play guard. You could play him at right tackle and allow him to start over there, or at least provide quality depth for the right tackle battle. Ultimately, it would be a luxury pickup. But again, when you have the type of offensive talent that you have, getting as many high quality guys on the offensive line is important. So that's going to be one to keep an eye out. I'm not going to hold my breath. I think Herring really is the big one. Keep an eye out, whether it's Go PowerCat, whether it's K-State Online. I'm sure there's going to be some defensive tackles coming through. Maybe you'll see a cornerback. I mean, I know they said they wanted a backup quarterback. I still don't know if that's going to happen. But if you can lock in Herring, I think you're good at linebacker. Obviously, you're good at running back. I think it really becomes a priority of finding another defensive tackle to split snaps with Uso Samalo and allow Damian Alalio one more season to kind of ramp up to be depended on to be on that two deep. I have no doubt that Damian Alalio will have his name called on. He's going to have to play important snaps for K-State. But I do think finding one more guy to keep Damian developing for one more year before he's depended on to be playing, you know, 20, 30 snaps a game, I think that's going to be massive. So keep an eye over at K-State Online, Go PowerCat, Kellis Robinette covering the team for Kansas City Star. All those folks do a great job covering it. So make sure that you keep an eye on there as we look for some more transfers to round out this season upcoming for 2024. It's going to be a big one. Before we talk NFL draft, just one more shout out to Manhattan Brewing Company, the best brewery in the world. I love them. I love them so much. I'm going to have a Wabash Ale after I'm done recording this one. We'll recap it. Ben Sennett went in the second round, second tight end overall. Again, last week we were talking about it. We said that, hey, this could be where he goes in the second round, second tight end. Part of me is a little surprised he went before Cooper Beebe. I'm not an NFL GM. I think both of them, I think Ben Sennett went about where he should have. I think Cooper Beebe went way too late. But all the signs were pointing towards this, you know, of Ben Sennett going middle of round two, early to middle round two, and that Cooper Beebe probably was going to be early in round three. So Ben Sennett going to Washington, again, hopefully starting, maybe not a pipeline because it's going to be a while, but hopefully the start of a lot of NFL tight ends coming out of K-State, because I think Garrett Oakley is going to be that guy. I think, you know, Will Ancio could be that guy. I think you got Metzger on the team that has NFL upside. Then, of course, in the recruiting battle for Lincoln Cure, one of the highest-rated kids ever to come out of the state of Kansas. So K-State's in a recruiting battle, you know, Texas A&M, Oregon, Notre Dame for him, and I still feel pretty good about Lincoln Cure coming to K-State. So, again, hopefully starting the beginning of K-State tight ends getting drafted. Cooper Beebe, I think he's going to play for 10-plus years. I don't know what the Dallas offensive line looks like, but if you gave me $100 and said, okay, do you want to gamble on Cooper Beebe being a starter by the end of the year, I would place that bet immediately. I think he's going to be starting. If not week one, he's going to be starting by the middle of the season. He is that good, folks. I think he's a future All-Pro. I think the ceiling is going to be just burst open with his potential. I truly think Cooper Beebe is going to have a massive year. It's going to be fun to see him coupled up with Deuce Vaughn, which, I mean, look, the Cowboys didn't draft another running back. So, I mean, look, is Deuce Vaughn going to start for them? I mean, look, the Cowboys are on national TV so much. Sign me up. I'll watch them. If Cooper Beebe and Deuce Vaughn are starting for them, I might even root for the Cowboys. Something I've really never done in my life. Although, you know, it was fun seeing Terrence Newman play there for so long. KT Lev goes super late in the seventh round, picked 254 overall to the LA Rams. I was so happy for him. Look, again, no idea what the depth chart looks like for KT Lev, but I think even if he starts on the practice squad, I think he can have an NFL career 4 or 5 years, or hell, maybe even longer. Once you get in there, if you can prove yourself, linemen can play forever. And KT's athletic. I think he's going to play guard in the NFL. But again, with all of his snaps, or almost like 98% of his snaps at K-State being as a tackle. He's the type of guy who has the positional flexibility and the athleticism that maybe he is the sixth or seventh lineman on the Rams or on a team in the future, and he can plug and play anywhere across the line except for center and either help get to the next guy or maybe he's going to be a long-term starter as a guard. I don't know what his career is going to look like, but he has potential to really turn it into a long career because he is athletic, because he does have that positional flexibility. And I'm so excited for him because, again, his growth from day one in Manhattan to him graduating, playing in that bowl game, it is just night and day, And I'm just so happy for him. I truly believe KT is one of the great developmental stories for K-State football. It's just a shame that, you know, a two-star defensive tackle turned into a consensus first-team All-American, kind of outshined, kind of put him in a shadow, his development story in a shadow. But I was so happy when KT got that call because he deserves it. I am so proud of KT Leviston. With those draft picks, it was the first time since 2002-03 that K-State had back-to-back seasons with two guys in the top 75 draft picks. And also the first time since 2002-03 where we have back-to-back drafts with three or more players getting drafted. Nice little streak to put together. Not the end-all be-all that some of the pundits want you to think when it comes to college football, but it is nice for K-State. That's now 10 draft picks for Chris Klieman. Again, when you're recruiting, when you're going after these high caliber athletes, being able to say, hey, you know, in our handful of years here, we have 10 guys in the NFL, or 10 draft picks, excuse me, back-to-back years with two guys in the top 75, back-to-back years with three or more, and I'm hoping they can set that up again next year. Looking at this roster, I think the NFL prospects going in there, I think Easton Kilty, again, I think he is kind of like Cooper Beebe light. He's played all over the line in his career. I think he's going to be an NFL guard when he gets there. But I think he could be a fourth to fifth round pick. I think DJ Giddens, again, I think he could be a fourth to fifth round pick next year. And again, for running backs, hey, start your clock, get it going. So if he has another 1,200, 1,500-yard season from scrimmage, rushing and receiving, I don't want him to go, but it might be the smart move, so I'll keep an eye on him. And then, again, two of the safeties, Jordan Riley and Marquise Siegel. I think both those guys could be, you know, fourth to seventh round late draft picks. I think all four of those guys, I don't think any of them have third round or better potential, except for maybe Kilty if he has a great year. But again, getting guys drafted is a nice thing, is a big thing. Maybe Dante Cephas, if he has a big year, can find himself on draft boards. I think it's going to be a good run moving forward. Undrafted free agents and rookie minicamp invites. We got Khalid Duke going to the Tennessee Titans. We got Christian Duffy going to the Carolina Panthers, Hayden Gillum to the Chicago Bears, Phillip Brooks to the Kansas City Chiefs, and Randon Plattner to the Baltimore Ravens. Gun to my head, I wouldn't anticipate any of these guys making NFL rosters. Even practice squad might be tough. I don't know what's going on with the Ravens and their long snapper situation. But if they don't like their long snapper, you know, they're going to pay their long snapper like $2 million. Maybe Plattner gets a job with the Ravens. And once you're in as one of those specialist spots, you could be a 20-year pro. So I'm hoping they all have great camps. Selfishly here in Kansas City, I hope Phillip Brooks makes it to preseason so I have something to watch in the Chiefs, you know, fourth quarter of their preseason games. But again, I mean, maybe Khalid Duke can get on a practice squad. Again, he was a combine invite. He was one of the first guys signed, so I know Tennessee really likes him. So hopefully he can get to training camp, get to the preseason. And if he doesn't find it on the 53-man roster, get on the practice squad. But it will be interesting to follow those guys as well. But that's all we have. Look, it was a wild football episode. We got a wild basketball episode that you guys will be listening to tomorrow. I'm having to decide if I want to record that tonight or if I'm going to just wait on Monday, because all sorts of moving parts for basketball as well. So that's all we have for this episode. We'll be back tomorrow. Yeah, that's all we got. Fun day. All right, for Chauncey Bosco, the best dog in the world, my name is Scott. We love you guys, and go Cats.
It's time to get set for the Cat Attack.
You can feel the excitement. You can feel it coming on for Kansas State. The feeling's growing strong. You can join in the action. This is where you want to be with Kansas State. Come on, set your spirit free. Kansas State, our pride is with the Cats. Kansas State, come on, join the Cat Attack. Kansas State, excitement's in the air. Kansas State, the fun is being there. Having a good time there. Purple and white we share. Showing our colors everywhere. Kansas State, our pride is with the Cats. Kansas State, come on, join the Cat Attack.
Sports Social Podcast Network.